Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Pod Maverick. I'm Kirk Henderson, joined tonight by two of Mav Moneyball's finest, Jack Bonin and Tyler Edsel. How are you tonight, guys?
Oh, doing good, man. Doing good.
Slow news day.
Jack, have you been on the show before? I can't remember. I do this.
You know, I before I started writing for the staff, I would always hop in on like the green rooms, the Spotify Lives back in the day. But I think for the Pod Maverick, you know, After Dark show, I think this might be the debut.
Right, because you are at a lot of games, and it's like, you know, you don't need to be around and go talk to more people after just having witnessed something. So obviously a big news day for the Mavericks. I was on 35 when one of my friends, shout out Ben Allison, who had texted me on June 6th and said Dusty May is going to be the Mavericks' next head coach. Just sort of, he was just making stuff up. And he's like, see, I'm right. So really amazing. The Mavs hired Dusty May, former University of Michigan coach, now former University of Michigan coach, national champion. And the real fun part about this hire is that the newsmakers in the world had kind of told us this was not a thing. And so we'd all moved on and looking at different people. And the painful and very funny part, this is why I'm glad I don't make news. This is like the fourth time that's happened since Nico Harrison got fired. Where it's like, oh, well, the Mavericks aren't going to be able to trade Anthony Davis. Boom, Anthony Davis traded. They're nowhere close to a GM search or nowhere close to a GM hire. Masai Ujiri hired. Boom. Yeah. And now this, which is, I've got to say, judging by the reactions of Michigan people, just on that alone, this has to be a fantastic hire because I haven't seen people this upset in a while. Like there was like despondence amongst my fan bases. Jack, you are a Michigan fan. So Why don't you tell us a little bit about Dusty May and why you either love or hate this hire. I'm very curious.
Well, to be clear, I love it. And I'm way more of a Mavericks fan than I am a Michigan fan. And my father, who is a Michigan alum, I texted him. I broke the news to him this morning right after it happened. And my dad is kind of the same way. He definitely, I would say, is more of a Mavericks fan than a Michigan fan at this point in his life. But he's still like, you know, a big Michigan guy. But his first reaction was I texted him the news and he said, that sucks for Michigan. Like, that was his first, you know, reaction to it. And I think he was kind of hoping that the Mavs would find another coach and that he could still keep Dusty at Michigan. But like, you know, nobody really even thought that the Dusty thing was really a possibility. So I'm over the moon. Can't say enough good things about Dusty. We can get into like, you know, kind of like what he does well, where he excels.
Let's just dip right into that because I need to know why. Like, so when his name gets thrown out, his name got thrown out to me because he had just won the national championship. And this is months ago, you know, kind of when that, well, I guess a month ago, whenever Kidd was fired. And so now that he's actually been hired, I am very curious as to why the Mavericks were so interested in him to make this kind of coaching hire. Because as, you know, it's up on Mavs Moneyball today. David Trink wrote a piece. Did I publish it yet? This is how you know I'm good at my job.
It's up.
Okay, he wrote a piece about, you know, leaving and what that has meant historically. Good Lord, we have a lot of Dusty May photos up on the site right now. Yeah. And it's, you know, the college, like guys jumping from pro or college to pros is not as common. It's just not that common, full stop, and even less successful. So talk to me about why you think this is so good, Jack. We'll start with you, and I know Tyler has thoughts too.
Yeah. I think that if you look at, obviously the track record isn't great for coaches that have made the jump, but I think you can kind of throw that out the window with this guy, because if you look at what he's done throughout his college career, he has not been like the stereotypical guy who comes over, you know, and is like the longtime college stalwart who then goes to the NBA. Like, he's a rising star. You know, look at what he did at FAU, like taking a team that just really not a relevant basketball school in the slightest, taking them not only to the tournament, but taking them to the Final Four, back-to-back tournament appearances with a roster that, you know, full of like guys that aren't, you know, top recruits. And then, you know, going to Michigan, did what he did there. Like, it's not the John Beilein situation. It's just not you know, it's not the same thing at all. He embraces modern basketball, and he's not one of these, you know, like the Bob Knights, the Calipari's. Like, he's not one of these like college sort of like recruiting legend, like really like strict, hard ass, like structured, rigid, disciplined sort of guy. Like, he's not that guy. He's, you know, I wouldn't go as far as to call him a player's coach, but he's way more of a player's coach than guys like that. And I just think that he is the moment of where basketball is. Like, he has all the modern philosophies that you want, but he's not rigid in them. Like, he's not going to be like a strict calculator rat kind of guy. He's not going to be like, you know, a straight.
This is my system.
Yeah, yeah. He values spreadsheets. He values, you know, all the things that you're supposed to value in modern basketball. But he's done a great job at identifying things that other guys don't see. So we can get more. We'll get more into that. I have, you know, a few examples here. But Tyler, sure. Tyler probably watches way more college basketball than I do, and so I'm interested to see to hear what Tyler thinks. You know, in that kind of
realm. Me too, Tyler. Fire away.
Well, the thing that stands out most to me about Dusty, first and foremost, and I know we were kind of talking about this before we hit go on this, the way that he's kind of built two different teams, like two different complete styles, and has taken mm-hmm. both to the Final Four with varying different levels of money. I mean, yep. You look at his first team, the FAU team that he took to the Final Four in 23. I mean, that team was, most of the time, it was four guards and a center, mm-hmm. right? It was Elijah Martin and Nick Boyd. Nick Boyd, who was actually in this draft class, which is very funny, went to play at Wisconsin. And then they had Vladislav Golden, who he eventually got to follow him on his first Michigan team. And then you look at, you know, the team at Michigan that went to the Sweet 16 that had Golden. And I think Elijah Martin was on that team as well, maybe, if he got him to move on from FAU with him. But this team was still more traditional in a sense. And then you look this year – I mean, it's three bigs with Merez and Yaxel and Mara. And, you know, honestly, the thing that I thought was going to hold this Michigan team back the entire time was guard play. I was not an Elliott Cadeau guy when he was at North Carolina. And all of a sudden you look down the stretch and he, in the Final Four, like, it's my opinion, he should have been most outstanding player. Like, he was the kind of the cog that kept that team going. And I just didn't think Cadeau had that in him. So – for me, where this is at with May is, number one, I trust him to tailor a system to the personnel he has, which we'll get into later, why I don't think he'll necessarily have a ton of impact on the draft day decisions. And secondly, I think we're going to be looking at a situation here where, I mean, he's just going to be able to connect with players, get the best out of them. And by all accounts, I mean, he is an excellent X's and O's man, both in terms of game planning and also in terms of in-game adjustment. So there's a lot to like with him. Obviously, a lot will depend on his staff that he brings, but by all accounts, he's going to bring an excellent staff. I know Matt Norlander with CBS did a big sit-down with Dusty earlier this summer and has kind of posted a lot of the deep cuts that weren't necessarily on the first cut, since now he's an NBA head coach. So I'd recommend go seeking that out. But, I mean, the reason that I called this a coup in the newsroom is just, like we all kind of have mentioned, we didn't think this was on the table just because he'd been kind of lumped in with Shire and that they were going to pitch him on it, but it didn't seem realistic. But, hey, persistence pays off, and the Mavericks have their guy.
So I want to ask this. I wasn't around a lot today. I'm reading a lot of news pieces, stuff in other chats. It seems that the Mavericks actually did approach Shire and then went to May.
And depending on who you trust, Shire may or may not have given the job a bit more of a look than was initially kind of reported.
See, and the reason I bring this up is we know for a fact, this is a reported thing, that the Flagg family, meaning Cooper's mother, was not particularly delighted by the Kidd firing. Not because she had any love for Jason Kidd. Rather, I think she wanted continuity, which is actually a criticism of the process, which I think is important. But that goes back to things that happened before Cooper's even drafted by the Mavericks. So I think you have to at least give Shire a look if Cooper is interested not to placate. That's disrespectful. But if that's something he wants, and if you think Shire is up to that quality, and the Mavericks clearly did, I think you have to approach him.
Yeah, he would have been a great hire as well if they were able to get him. I think you know, both those guys, you know, at the college level are probably the top of the profession, you know, guys that could make the transition to the NBA really well. I think that with Dusty, I think his talent evaluation, not only talent evaluation, but his ability to take guys who have talent, who maybe others and maybe other teams or maybe other organizations or other programs in college, like, were not able to see in the same way. Like, Cadeau is a perfect example of, like, by all the numbers and the tape and, like, the conventional wisdom, you're like, this guy really probably won't succeed, you know, with this group. He's going to be overtasked as the primary ball handler. And he just made it work because he saw something in him that other guys didn't see. He saw something, and, like, Elijah Martin, who Tyler brought up earlier, like, that guy was a zero-star recruit. You know, that guy, like, almost went and played football, you know? and his freshman year of college, he averaged 4 points per game. And he got drafted in the NBA. Like, he was a second-round pick. Like, that's, you know, so he has the recruiting stuff, you know? Like, he has his recruiting wins. But, like, I'm more impressed with what he's done with Michigan over the last 2 years, like, going to the transfer portal and being like, okay, it's different evaluating, like, these mega high school prospects who have, like, all this crazy potential and all this, like, you know, like, they're so raw, they're so young, they're so, like, you're going to have them for 1 year and maybe they go to the league. Versus when you go to the transfer portal, you're like, okay, these guys have already been in college for a little and they haven't gone to the league for you know, this reason or that. And I'm still going to be able to evaluate their talent. And, like, yeah, I mean, obviously, like, Yaxel was the number one transfer in the portal. So it's not like he's finding all these diamonds in the rough, but he's like, I'm just going to get guys who are good at basketball and I'm going to get them on my team and we're going to figure it out, you know? And that's exactly what he did, because, like, this Michigan team last year, which, as we've discussed, like, was a group of hired guns. They were one of the best college basketball teams of all time. And that all has to do with how he was able to fit those pieces that on paper really don't fit that well. Like, right. You have two non-shooting bigs, you know, you have a three who's really more of a four, who's like a jumbo sort of point forward / secondary playmaker, you know, guy, again, like, not a proven shooter, but he's like, you're going to shoot, you're going to take shots, you're going to take threes, you know? And he did, and he made them at a respectable clip, you know? So it's like, he takes these guys who have talent and he makes them believe in themselves, and he helps them by putting them in positions where they can be successful. So I think that will translate to the NBA. I think that's a skill that can easily go from one level to
the next. So what I'm hearing is you think he can fix AJ Johnson. Just kidding.
If he does, then he's got Coach of the Year wrapped up in year one.
I'm just, you know, my kid was asking me questions and I was like, buddy, I don't know. But I am not in the position to talk enough about him. And so let me just kind of ask you. We'll start with Tyler first, and Brian's on the show too. For anybody on the audio that's listening, but we're gonna second half of the show, we'll talk a little bit of draft stuff here, and Brian has more stern opinions there. Would you qualify him, if you were to give him a label, would you consider him to be more of an offensive leaning coach or a defensive leaning coach, Tyler?
That's a really good question. I think what I would classify him is more of as an offensive coach, just because, like, some of the stuff he did with Yaxel and Merez and Mara this year was just super creative. Mm-hmm. And if you're a defensive-minded coach, I don't think you'd come up with that type of stuff.
Okay.
So I think he's more suited to play an offensive type of game. Like, when you look at Michigan, they weren't winning games, like, 68-50. They were winning games – a lot of times it was games being played into the 80s, low 90s. Like, this is a team that was very high-powered offensively, and they were very efficient. And, you know, like Jack was mentioning, it was not a team of bombing threes either, per se. I mean, you look at it, Cadeau wasn't really regarded as a high-level shooter. Mara has a little bit of touch, but he's not really a shooter. Merez was hovering around 30% from three, and Yaxel, I mean, I know the numbers were about 37, 38%, but anybody who watched Michigan, anytime a possession ended in a Yaxel three, you're probably like, okay, it's kind of a win. We'll take that. So it's things like that. And when you have four guys who aren't necessarily regarded as shooters and you're still putting up high 80s, low 90s points per game, you're doing some really, really creative stuff. Now, I don't know if I'd put them on like the, you know, a lot of times we get like Dan Hurley is kind of regarded as like maybe your highest level college X's and O's guy. I think May is, if not on that tier, right at the tier below it. Like, I think he is an excellent, excellent mind when it comes to offensive basketball.
Okay. There are plenty of sets that, you know, just watching Michigan over the year where, like, you know, even like to the casual eye, like you're like, oh, he just did something there. You know, like he knows what he's doing. He has structure, but it's not like overly structured. It's, you know, I'm looking at the numbers right here, you know, from last year. Again, like Michigan was the best team in the country. They were a historically great team. They were 99th percentile in net rating, 99th percentile in offensive rating, 98th percentile in defensive rating. So, I mean, basically as good on offense and defense. They were 87th percentile in pace. So he likes to play fast. And he actually, if you go to Dusty May's Twitter account, like the last tweet that he has on his page was a retweet from College Basketball Analytics, where it pointed out how in Michigan's wins last year, they played fast, and in their losses, they played significantly slower. So they had a lot more success pushing the ball, playing fast, getting into sets quickly. That's how he wants to play. Defensively, I think he could be just as good though as offense, because he had like, not only did he have everybody like aware of the game plan and executing the game plan, but he was able to get guys to adjust so well. Yeah, there's the tweet right there on the screen. 6.2 possessions per 40 slower in losses than wins, biggest differential in the country. So that's pretty indicative of how he wants to play. But yeah, like on defense, he has guys tied together on a string. Like Michigan was so intentional when they were guarding the pick and roll about how, like, not only are we going to play, okay, we're going to play mostly drop, or we're going to play switch, or we're going to, you know, hedge. Like, they were like, no, you're not even getting the screen off. We're not even going to have to worry about what we're going to do. Like, we're going to blow up the ball screen right away. And if we do get screened, if guys do get put in action, we're going to recover. We're going to fly around. We're going to be tied together. Like, they were just, I mean, it helps when you have like three athletic freaks in the front court, you know? And you're able to, like, you know, scram and peel and fly around and do all that. But like, they were so tied together defensively. And so that was what was most impressive, I think, to me, you know, watching the team last year. But yeah, offensively, he's really, really smart. So I think it's really the fact that it's even a conversation that we have to sit here and be like, is he better on offense or defense? Like, that's a huge positive.
I agree. And you know, shout out to other Jack of Mavs Moneyball. He's not here to defend himself. But part of the reason I asked this question is because I've been a little annoyed existentially at what made Cooper Flagg the number one overall pick and what made him a massive prospect 2 years ago was not his offense. It was his defense. And I think that, you know, him being used in an Andre Kirilenko-y role where he's able to have more defensive impact, because frankly, like, the Mavericks defensive system last year was there wasn't one. Like, yeah. they had no principles. Yeah. Shout out Jason Kidd. And you know, maybe that would have changed had things gotten a little closer to like playoff contention, because Kidd was obviously a pretty good X's and O's coach whenever he decided to be. That was kind of the issue, is he was really able
to draw up some ISOs for
a little bit. Kidd just didn't coach enough. Like that is a criticism that I don't think anyone would disagree with. And so it doesn't seem like May's gonna have that problem. I'm just kind of interested to see if we can put Cooper in a position where he can be more impactful. You know, for the reason that made him such an interesting prospect, like his blocks and his stocks numbers were kind of not there. And I, you know, that's either because of energy, which is, you know, he was forced to play a massive offensive role. That's because of scheme defensively, where it's just like, all right, he didn't want to get into foul trouble, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm kind of curious to see if that's an element of his skill set that we might see more of in the Cooper Flyer, the Dusty May era. So I like that. I think, Jack, you're right. The fact that there's not an easy answer to it sort of it illustrates the point about why he's an interesting hire. And why, if you are a little out on the idea of a college coach just due to history, and frankly, that's a good argument given, you know, who's failed. I think there's upside here that we're gonna, you know, if the Mavericks play their first 20 games and look very different and decent, like I think we just have to be really excited. Like that's, you know, the NBA season is too long, too weird. You know, it's I'm looking forward to seeing just a very different and new approach. And you know, maybe that requires, and we're talk to Brian about this in a second, you know, getting rid of some of the veterans and really just starting over fresh. But this is an exciting place to be.
Yeah. And like going back again to like the, well, guys who come from college are never good in the NBA. It's like, okay, well, you have to like, you can't just, I mean, I know like, in the aggregate, like history is not kind to it, but you have to say why that is. Like you have to look at each individual case and be like, okay, why didn't this guy have success? What was it about his coaching style? What was it about his principles? What was it about his scheme? And I think that if you look at each one of those guys, like we're not going to sit here and go through them right now, but like if you look at each one of those guys, I think there's a reason why you can point to that's not just, well, he couldn't handle the jump from college to the pros. And I think with Dusty May, in terms of like his offensive and defensive philosophies and in terms of like his talent evaluation, in terms of his what he values, like, you know, the person he is, the character and the relationships he has, I don't think you can point to anything as like, okay, this is a potential red flag. Like with a guy like John Beilein, for example, there was all kinds of potential red flags where it's just like, this guy is like too much of a hard ass and doesn't have quite enough of the modern sensibilities on both ends to be a good coach. So I think yeah, it's a concern in terms of like history, but I personally don't have it at all because like Dusty May is not those other guys. And there are examples, like I think the Brad Stevens comparison gets thrown out a lot, which I'm not expecting him to be Brad. If he is Brad Stevens, then we'll all be really happy. But like that's an example of like the kind of coach he is.
Okay. Very similar age range too to when Brad came out of Butler.
Exactly.
Okay. Very similar. And they value the reason that comp gets thrown out so much is because they both value kind of the same ideals of basketball. They're not like complete and total analytics only.
Yeah.
But they use it enough to know what they're doing with also having the feel for the game of basketball, matchups, opponents, things like that. And if there's one thing you can say about Dusty May, he's never going to go into a game unprepared, but he's also never going to be able to go fully into a game with just like, oh, these are our matchups and it is what it is. He's not going to be afraid to tell a player, you know, your numbers say that you need to be doing this instead of that, right? Or you need to be guarding this person instead of that person, right? Like, I think Dusty's going to be really, really good. Maybe not in the regular season because, I mean, it's 82. You're probably just going to get a lot of, you know, base type defense, things like that. But I think Dusty has the chance to be a really, really good playoff coach if we can ever get there, because he's not going to leave any stone unturned in terms of getting matchup stuff down and things of that nature.
All right, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to throw to a quick ad break. You guys know the drill. I'm not going to repeat myself six ways from Sunday on this. And then we'll be right back, and we'll talk a little bit about anything else remaining. We got Jack and Brian, both Jacks on the show. Very exciting here. So we're going to insert those ads. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Before we kind of talk about other stuff, this is a good question from the chat. I want to kind of address it directly. Jamie Cardona, longtime listener, always here. Shout out Jamie for hanging out. He says, "How many years before we know if it's a failure?" This is one of the perks about not having your own draft pick this year, is they have no reason to fuck up. There is no tanking going to go on this season. So I think we will know this year if it makes a difference. Now, if that's the difference between what did the Mavericks finish up, like 25 wins?
26.
Yeah, they're about.
Okay. So like if they finish in like the 36 to 41 win range, I think you have to look at the quality of those wins, how people played and developed, and just sort of mark your takeaways like that. I think there's going to be a big push among the fan base that the Mavericks need to be play-in, playoff adjacent. I think that's a fair goal. But if they don't hit that goal, I'm not going to hold it against. Because they're like, we're doing a on-the-fly tear-down rebuild. Whoa, that's a loud noise.
Sorry. It's right outside my window.
That's amazing. Right near the classical piano there in the background. Okay. So what else do we want to cover? Because I know we want to talk about why we don't think the draft. But go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, too, like one more thing about his offense, and this is kind of true, like not as much this year, but definitely the year before at Michigan, was that like they were a relatively high turnover team. Dusty hasn't always been the best like turnover suppression guy, but he kind of makes up for it with like his teams are usually very good on the offensive glass. And they play really fast. So that's one thing that could, like, especially if we don't go with like one of the turnover suppressing guards in the draft, like we could have some growing pains with that. Like, if, you know, especially if they lean more into Coop ball handling, like we could see some more turnovers than we're used to for Mavs teams. So that's just something to, you know, keep an eye on, but nothing that I think will be a problem.
Okay. Now, Jack Nowicki, how you doing, buddy?
Doing good.
You joined late. Do you have any takes on the college element of Dusty May and why the Mavericks hired him?
Well, I'll distill my thoughts here, but I like the hire. I didn't really think he was a real candidate. I thought if they hired a college coach, it'd be Shire from Duke, but it makes sense why hiring a coach took this long. If they were really going after these college guys, how's his timeout usage? Well,
that's a really funny joke.
I laughed the second I saw it.
I mean, I can answer that real quick.
Oh, yeah. We got a Michigan.
There was at least one or two times like in the tournament where I was like, dude, Dusty, why aren't we calling a timeout? So,
because it gets one, you know, every that, 4 minutes.
Yeah, like that's we could something to monitor, you know.
I love it. Keep going, Jack. Sorry, I derailed you.
Oh, yeah. No, it's fine. But I like him. Obviously, he did wonders for Yaxel Indeborg, Merez Johnson, Anna De Mara. All three guys weren't really considered like lottery prospects at all going into this year's draft, and all three of them are probably going to get picked in the lottery. And then I saw this on Twitter, and I thought it was a really, really interesting stat, was Yaxel Indeborg's shot diet, his last year at UAB and then this year at Michigan, where he went from, I think it was 50% of his shot attempts were at the rim, 36% were from three or from the mid range, and 10% were from three. This year he was 40% of his shots at the rim. I think it was 46 from three, and then 10% from the mid range. So, you know, as someone I've mentioned multiple times when I've been up here, like, got to shoot more threes, got to start, you know, cutting out some of these bad mid range jumpers. So it seems that he's also of that belief. So that one stat, I was like, all right, I'm sold.
I do not think the Mavericks will be, I think they were 29th in 3-point volume last year. Do not think they will be that under May.
They'll be higher.
Okay.
And not only does Dusty like to take a lot of threes, like he's not afraid to take a lot of threes with a bunch of guys who are like quote unquote not shooters. You know, like
Coop,
again, we talked about it earlier on the show. Like Michigan did not have a bunch of bona fide shooters, but Dusty's like, we're shooting threes anyway. If it's kind of like in the WNBA, like the Golden State Valkyries are like, they have one of the best offenses in the league this year, but if you look at their roster, like they don't have a lot of really actual 3-point shooters, but they just take more than everyone else. Like there is something to that. You know, you can't win every game with math, but you can win a lot of them.
Yeah. So, especially in the regular season, which is what the Mavericks should be focusing on. Uh-huh. Probably the next 2 or 3 years, like you can win a ton of games by just having 3-point variance. So,
and Dusty's going to do that. He's going to get threes up. That's not a concern for anybody.
And like Kirk, I know you've talked about this a ton. Like they just need to shoot them. Whether or not they go in is, you know, I mean, it'll matter, but they just have to attempt them.
Brian left us. Where did he go?
He said he got frozen.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He'll be back.
Feel better. Okay. Well, this is I want to give him his thoughts here because, like, I just got to emphasize this enough where it's like the hiring of this group of three. Let's just say we start with Masai, you get to Schmidt, and then you go with Dusty May. And if you would have told me this in April of 2025, like pre-lottery, with Cooper, I would have said, you're a fucking psycho. The Mavs are like dying and we should all be sad. Like that threesome, realistically, and then Cooper, I don't think I could have possibly asked for more. And like my wife, is that a crazy take? Okay. Jack, Brian's back. He's no longer frozen. All right. So let's, I want to hear from you, Brian. What do you think, you know, this does or does not mean for the Dallas Mavericks drafting?
I don't think that it takes much off the table that the Mavericks were considering before, really, at all. In fact, I think it makes it more likely that some of the people that we may have been targeting before are going to stay our main targets. I'm glad that Jack brought up that tweet. I actually had the same one bookmarked and was going to read off Yaxel Shatai from his last year at UAB compared to this past year at Michigan. I think he's going to do wonders for Cooper in that regard, like fixing the shot diet and tuning it to make it a bit more, you know, palatable for the NBA. I think that whatever, because he, Dusty has such a good track record as like a skill developer as well, I think we can expect sort of the same thing for any prospect we do bring in. So if it is, you know, Braden Burry's at 9, like his is already pretty optimized. So it would be imagine less of that. Braden
Burry's with a 55% 3-point rate instead of a 35% 3-point rate. Oh,
yeah. Like
I saw that. Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
No, you're good. It's like the 3-point volume goes up. The reps on ball probably go up because we're trying to develop that. If it is Kinks and Flemings, that shot diet is getting entirely
run.
Right.
And like, especially in the best way. Like if they get Burry's as well, like they need to be sprinting in transition with Cooper.
Yeah, we are turning teams over. We're getting out in transition as fast as we can.
They will,
right?
And like, And Jack, you mentioned like the turnover stuff. One thing that I think is a good thing for the Mavericks is Cooper last year was a really really good turnover suppressor. Yeah, I mean for the situation he was in as a rookie as a wing. He didn't turn the ball over much, and if you compare like
three games all year,
it was like a couple games. I was like, what is going on? Like that Warriors game, he couldn't stop turning it over. Yeah. But either way, I remember that. If they could add someone like Ibuka Okori, who's also a really good turnover suppressor, like I think that could help negate some of those issues. But if you're going to play fast like that, you're going to turn the ball over. As long as you can get offensive rebounds, it doesn't really hurt you that much.
Yeah, like the real overlap with things that we already have on this roster and the kinds of players that I know that Masai and Schmitz both like to target relative to the kinds of players that Dusty has brought onto his rosters at Michigan, because I didn't, you know, catch much of them at Florida Atlantic. So all I know is really the Michigan years. They love to have their players with size, especially positional size. They love to have their players who are decent to high feel, right? Able to be good connectors, keep the ball moving. And he's particularly fond of like really good foot speed, especially in the front court. Now, if he can't always get it and you just get like a guy who blots out the sun,
a Daymara,
like a Daymara, right? Or you get a guy like last year who can do a bit of everything, like at least so we thought, in like a Danny Wolf, right? Then he'll make an exception. But for the most part, those are the kinds of players that he's looking for. So I think we see like, I think Dusty will have something to do with what we're going to do on draft day. I don't think he's going to have like a lot of input. I do definitely think that they've talked to him about some of the guys that they're looking at.
You know who he also likes? He for the last 2 years at Michigan, if there are any guy, and even going back to FAU with Martin, is he does not mind a small ball handling guard. You know, between Trey Donaldson and Elliot Cadeau. He is totally comfortable with the small, quote unquote, unathletic, you know, guard, you know, running the show for his teams. Now, I don't think that he's, you know, married to that idea or that he's like, you know, ideally wants a small guard.
But, right. Yeah.
I don't think it was his choice. Yeah.
No, it definitely was. He got who he could get, but he can make it work, you know, with that. And like, I think a guy like Okori would be a dream for the Dusty May offense. Like, plays fast, rim pressure, athletic, you know, like wingspan, like I think that that would be a name that, like, if they were to make shoot that trade.
Yeah, willing to shoot, yeah, willing to defend, turnover suppressor.
Yes.
Rim penetration, all those things. Like, I think that if we were to make that reported possible trade with OKC and trade down for 12 and 17, like, Okori is definitely somebody they would take. They would take.
Morez and Okori. That's where we're at. Yeah,
like, Filon's in play, Okori's in play, Morez is in play.
Please explain to the group. To Brian, start with you. Well, no, I want Jack to do this.
Yeah, start with Jack.
Jack's a Michigan fan here. Well, this is a simple question, Brian. You'll get why. Explain to the Mavs fans who are only just surface level aware of, like, the connection with the coach and his players who are in the draft, why Yaxel is not an option for the Mavericks, in your opinion.
Well, apart from the fact that there's a lot of, like, skill overlap with Coop, and sort of, like, positional overlap. And, you know, I think both players are talented enough, athletic enough, long enough, big enough to make it work. But, like, yeah, I don't want to say that, like, Yaxel has, like, off-court issues. I mean, we know about, like, in his background, like, he took a long time to play, like, high-level basketball because of, you know, academic issues, you know, sort of just being eligible to play basketball. And I think that following the Michigan team, it is a very good achievement that Dusty May was able to achieve cohesion in the locker room and with this team and create a system where guys played for each other and guys played hard, because, like, Yaxel just he has sort of an interesting way of looking at things and an interesting way of reacting to things.
I like your phrasing this so delicate. Yeah. This is fantastic.
He's so nice. He's so
I'll be the asshole then. There's been enough reporting on him during this process that he has, as the oldest guy in the draft, managed to come across as the most immature in the draft process. Immature.
He's a bit of a weirdo. He's a weirdo. I'll say that. He's a weird dude. He's a guy that I could see having a lot of problems with teammates if things don't go well. He's a guy that, he's a little
odd. He strikes me as a guy who would do better in a veteran laden situation where the Mavericks are not going to be that. No. And so I think, like, those things alone, because, like, the skill level's obvious. He's a plug and play guy, right? Like, he's going to get 25 minutes a game as a rookie, but for this Mavericks team, I don't see it as a realistic option for all of those reasons of, you know, threw together.
He needs an established culture, I think, is probably
the Thunder are a great place for him because it's younger guys that have already been through the wars. And, like, you just, like, Jared McCain is a psychopath. People don't understand how crazy competitive he is. Who also likes to have a good time. Sometimes you just need that guy in your office space and in your working group to be like, shut the fuck up. I mean, we've had some crazy people that work with us at Mavs Moneyball, and every now and again, one of my assets as a skill manager is being able to massage people out of their craziness or channel it towards working for, like, content. And, like, a younger team isn't going to have that focus. Like, they just aren't, because the Mavericks are a ball of clay, Play-Doh right now. Like, we got to figure out what they're going to be.
That's why you see Yaxel a lot, 11, 12, 13, Golden State, OKC, Miami.
Right.
Those are three places who would probably be best suited to kind of be able to integrate him into your team culture and not really lose anything.
Okay.
Right.
Well, I just had to address that element. Are there any other?
Yeah.
So while we're here, because I think we've kind of covered the Dusty May of it all, we are, you know, this podcast will have a shelf life of about 14 hours. Like, no one's going to listen to it because the draft comes next. And we're recording after the show tomorrow night talking about what happens. Yeah. Well, I have everybody. We'll start with Tyler and work our way back around to old Jack. Talk to me. Tell me what you think is going to happen tomorrow night for the Mavericks.
Old Jack.
I think the Mavericks make one trade. I do not think it involves pick 9. I think they pick either Braden Burries or one of the tall guards, if one of the tall guards falls to them. And if not, they will trade back. But I believe it's either Burries or Mike Eller-Walker. Well, let's put it that way. And then I think they trade up from pick 30. I don't think they stay there.
Okay. Fun.
So that means I guess if you're putting together the same draft parlay on FanDuel, we'll go guard at 9, trading up at 30 using one of the vets.
I love it. Jack?
I'm so torn. I really am 50-50 between them sticking and picking at nine and taking Burries or trading back with OKC. I think the fact now that we've heard that they're discussing that proposal, I think it's clear that they're very interested in doing that. Like, that's the one constant rumor we have heard for the Mavericks this entire time has been they're looking at trading back. They've talked to teams about trading back. I do think they will trade back. I think they'll trade back from nine with OKC, and I think it'll be because Braden Burries is not at nine. I think he will get shockingly picked before the Mavericks, and I will lose my mind when they pass on Kingston Flemings at nine.
Okay. Back. Yeah.
I just feel like there's been nothing with Kingston Flemings. No, like, we don't know if he's worked out. Like, I don't.
He did work out here.
He did work out. Okay. Yeah. But, like, I think I've heard nothing.
Yeah.
And they've been tied to all these guys in, like, the 12 through 17 range. So, in terms of who they pick at those spots, it's kind of impossible because, you know, I don't know. But if I had to guess, I think they go Filon at 12, and I think they go Lopez at 17. I think they'll kind of go like one, like, you know, Filon you kind of expect to play next year, and then Lopez is kind of the long-term swing.
Did anybody hear Hoop Collective today?
I did.
Fran Fraschilla cooked. Yes, I know he is not everybody's cup of tea. He was fantastic this show. He went number one. He confirmed all of our Ament fears. Like, he was just
basically volunteer, baby.
He essentially said he's 2 years away from being 2 years away. It was like was a subtle murder that really made me laugh out loud at like 7 a.m. The second was that he said about Lopez. Whereas he said, you know, he's like, what if Eduardo Nájera were more athletic? And I'm just like I'm of the age where that's a like, okay, we could talk about that. Okay. Anyway, but it was a fun podcast. Brian, what do you think happens?
I believe specifically because there has not been much noise around Kingston to Dallas. And we know that none of the local reporters nor the national reporters that are connected to the Mavs really have great sourcing with the Mavs or within the Mavs anymore. I believe the Kingston Flemings will be the pick at nine. And I do think we're going to trade up from 30 with Gafford to Charlotte's pick at 18, take back Josh Green, and we're going to take either Marez or Cam Clark.
Josh Green? F.
Josh Green homecoming. Josh Green homecoming. He'll be coming back to ride the pine and pass Gatorade to Cooper Flag, but
was Gibbs?
Play next year.
Was it?
He shoots 45% from the corner. He needs to play.
Yeah, and there's God. Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, he just get freed from the shackles of Slovenia and Chino Hills, and he's just like, yeah, I'm actually going to shoot like four threes a game, and 40% from the corners. Yeah.
I had not heard this. This is viscerally upsetting. Josh Green.
To make the money work. The funny thing is,
it's either him or Grant Williams.
Or it's Grant Williams.
Him or Grant Williams. Which one?
Yeah, which Grant Williams, that blows up the deal for me. We can't have that guy.
I would say no. I'm good. I'm good.
My wife was out with some friends once in Dallas and saw him out on a date with some girl. And all they all came back and were telling me about it. And all three women were like, that girl out on the date with Grant Williams looks so uncomfortable. And it's just me laugh the whole, like, always. Like, it's just one of those things. It's just like, yeah, you know, then, like, it was right around the time that Luca apparently destroyed him in practice. Just a F tier. Oh my God.
Not a good time.
I can't believe you put that into the universe.
Fuck. I like Josh Green.
I mean, like Atlanta. Atlanta shopping that pick.
I was here. Obviously, I was here. I am eternal as apparently part of Mavs Moneyball. The night that they drafted Josh Green was one of the only times Josh Bow was so upset. We had nothing to do. So it's like, we're watching all this stuff during COVID. And it's like, when they make these draft picks and, you know, the muscle hamster was sitting there and he had been Josh's guy the whole time. And then they pick Green. Yeah. It's like, it's like the post draft coverage that night was just like, what we had three picks and we fucked them all up. How is
Tyrell
that?
Terry.
Seth Curry, yeah.
Tyler Bay. Yo, I was sold on Tyler Bay. I thought he was going to be good.
He had a huge wingspan.
Yeah, he won, at the time, Pac-12 Defensive Player of the Year. I was like, oh, this guy's perfect. I don't know if he ever played a game for the Mavericks.
Jack, what's your take on the draft?
Oh, I was going to say first, never forget that Tyrell Terry broke the IQ test that they administer to players. He broke the record for the
in
IQ test.
In a bad way? Like
in a dumb way? In a good that he had the all-time highest record, which was like to me like the most Donnie Nelson, like last era Donnie Nelson.
That's Harold Bob. That's Harold Bob. That's Harold Bob 100%.
I love it.
But all right, who we playing? I think – so part of me wanted to like go super doomer with this and just be like, you know, like – If I'm wrong, I'll be happy. But I was like, there's like a very sneaking suspicion that they're gonna pick Nate Amon at 9, and if he goes before, they're just gonna pick Kareem Lopez at 9. But I would lose my mind
on this show tomorrow.
I'm gonna say that they are gonna make that. Before the Stein reporting yesterday, I thought the 12-17 trade with OKC was mostly just like wish casting.
Everybody told me it was delusion, man.
We've been here.
But you know, I thought that too. I'm not saying I thought it was full on delusion, but I'm like, there wasn't anything out there other than just like, hey, like this would make sense, you know.
I thought it was delusion for the last like 2 weeks, so I gave up on it. But we're back.
But like, you know, and obviously Stein reporting is not, you know, not set in stone or whatever. Yeah. But 12-17 being an option, or that's at least being talked about, like I'm going to go with that because it fits my agenda more. Because more than likely, if they get 12-17, they're going to take one guy I like and one guy maybe I don't like as much, but I can easily talk myself into.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with 12, and then at 12 they're going to go with if Filon is there at 12, they go with him. If he's not there, they go with Morez. Mm-hmm. And if Filon's gone, they go with Okori at 12. And then if at 17, they go with Steinbach. They go with Hein Steinbach.
I think Steinbach slides. Yeah.
I think that he's available at 17. And I think that if they go with a guard before, if they do that trade with OKC, I think that if he's available at 17, I think they go with him. I think that reporting was not, you know, fake, and I think that was significant, the timing of it, and I think that Steinbach to me represents the kind of guy that Masai likes. He seems like he checks those boxes, so that's I'll go ahead and go on a limb and say.
Well, and frankly, we saw what happened the 1 year the Dallas Mavericks went without someone from Würzburg, Germany, on the roster, and it's a pretty good argument to just have someone eternally from Würzburg on the roster.
Oh my goodness, Julius Randle just got traded. Julius Randle just got traded. Oh my goodness.
To who?
To Brooklyn
Nets. What?
Okay, good. Not to us.
That's Julius Randle and the number 28 pick in the draft tomorrow.
Oh, wait a minute.
Three-team deal.
Whoa, what's going on? Whoa.
That's huge, actually.
And the Timberwolves will take pick number 33.
Okay.
Okay, so they just cleared up like 30 mil, though. They just cleared up 30 mil on salary.
Randle was untenable there.
Yo, pick the Tim Connelly, man.
And given the new lottery rules, it is in Brooklyn's best interest to have Julius Randle win them a few games.
Yeah, I was about to say, Julius is going to be good for that team, man. They got some bums on that roster. And a couple of young guys with some promise, like, he'd be good for them.
Yeah, he's going to put up some serious numbers over there.
Oh, brother, you better get ready for some hazy 2020 mid-post fame.
Yeah,
you better get ready for it.
That's crazy.
Okay, what are the Timberwolves getting? Are they just getting like cap room?
They just need cap room.
They need to get off of Randle.
They're getting the 33 pick. Yeah. So they're
giving up 28.
Yeah, they're giving up 28. They're basically moving five. They spots move back down five draft.
But you got it. That second round,
30 mil.
Not first round money. Yeah,
that's not guaranteed. So it changes
much less salary, non guaranteed. If they don't need it to be, they got off one of the bigger salaries on their roster. This is crazy.
I
don't take that as a referendum on the player, because he was good for them for a long time and he held it down for them at like the number two, number three spot for as long as they needed it in the absence of Karl Anthony Towns, right? This is just a statement more on their cap situation, and this is why. Don't be surprised. We have something coming. Denver is going to be making a move with a player we think is just as good, or maybe a little bit worse than Julius. But they're going to be moving that player and their pick at 26 to somebody to get off of that, because they need to shed money right now.
Okay, well, there has to be another move for the Wolves, though, because you can't just trade Randle.
This is bringing back Ayo Dosunmu.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
this to is
trade dump Randle to bring back Io though. Like, why?
Yes, yeah. They need to bring Io's back not Io. That they good. Need to be prepared to. Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. Trust me.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he's good what they need. Not, I'm not yeah. fooled. He had one game. I'm not
good for them.
He's good all
it was more than that. Yeah.
I love it. Wow. Y'all are heated. This is the best.
Live reaction.
So this is specifically why we're not doing a live show during the draft tomorrow, because
it would just be us running around like chickens with our heads cut off for 2 hours.
I'm going to say what happens tomorrow is that the Mavericks draft Mykal Brown, because I want them to do that.
Somehow, that some way.
Why.
Hey. And if we full circled this, where like in October, I was like, dude, Mykal, I'd love Mykal. If we full circled, oh my goodness.
So what would you draft grade? Like Mykal, you trade a vet, move up to like
A+,
24, 25, and then you take like a, whether it be an Isaiah Evans or one of the wings who fall.
I'd love Evans. Yeah. No, I will say someone that
we haven't really mentioned.
Okay.
Keep an eye out for us potentially looking at Dalen Swain. Like if we get an extra, like picking the mid teams. Like,
yeah. If they trade Najee, bring in Swain.
So, like, our guy
– Oh, you're not Swain?
We have a Mavs Moneyball contributor, Jordan, who never comes on this thing because he has small children and just doesn't want to do it, said today that he is going, like, full analog tomorrow, where he's just putting his phone away and turning off the internet and enjoying the draft that way.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of genius, because, like, the draft is a social experience that can kind of be ruined by cell phones. But it's like it's going to be a fun day tomorrow. The Mavericks, it's a very consequential day. They cannot mess this up. Now, I will say that I don't think they will. Like I said this on a guy's show that I went on earlier today, where I said, like, I'm just eternally a grump. And I'm fine with where, like, this is just, there's no reason to be grumpy yet. Like, the Mavericks have really not given us a reason. Now, if they take Nate Ament tomorrow, like, we will.
No, you're the volunteer. We're fine there.
I will say, let me say real quick, I am an Ament hater, and I don't like him at all. And if they drafted him and he was, like, their main pick or even their only pick, like, I would be very upset. But circling back to the Dusty May of it all, with Dusty May, I feel 100 times better about Nate Ament than I would if we had got one, because he is going to get the most out of that guy. And the thing about Ament is that he is 2 years away from being 2 years away. But after those 2 years away from being 2 years away, he could turn into a real player. Like, he could, like, you can't teach 6'10 with the ball who is that, you know, with that.
You just
frame,
described that. Frame, who is that weird, you know, guy the Oklahoma City Thunder drafted late? No, but
no, drafted late. Poku.
That was
hey, that's who I compared to. He's Alexei Pokuchevsky. He's the John Salon. He's the John Salon. That's what he is.
Body type wise, those guys are polar opposites.
Yeah, you're right.
Again, I'm not here to defend Nate Ament. If they pick him, I'm going to crash out. But I do think that if they did, you know, do that and piss all of us off, then we could have some faith in Dusty's ability to, if he is going to reach his ceiling.
I mean, is he a miracle worker?
I'm just saying.
Look at his Rick career. Barnes, you know, he would literally be Jesus Christ.
Big picture. Yeah, like, we get so few opportunities to be like consistently happy as sports fans. Right now, it's just it's a time to enjoy the ride a little bit.
Oh yeah,
we'll freak out tomorrow if they fuck up. Don't you worry. I think, all right, it's been 50 minutes. I wanted to do 30 minutes, but thank you so much for giving me part of your evenings, guys. Go back to whatever it was you were doing. On behalf of Jack, all other Jack, Tyler, and Brian, this is Kirk Henderson. We are all over at Mavs Moneyball, writing lots of things. Everyone be good. We will talk to you soon. Go Mavs.
You're the